knowledge fight. Dan and Jordan, I am sweating. KnowledgeFight.com. It's time to pray.
I have great respect for Knowledge Fight.
Knowledge Fight. I'm sick of them posing as if they're the good guys, saying we are the bad guys. Knowledge Fight.
Dan and Jordan.
Knowledge Fight.
I need money. Andy in Kansas. Stop it. Andy in Kansas. Andy. It's time to pray. Andy in Kansas, you're on the air. Thanks for holding.
Hello, Alex. I'm a first-time caller. I'm a huge fan. I love your work.
Knowledge Fight.
KnowledgeFight.com. I love you.
So, folks, big developments in the world of Alex Jones. This is a bizarre way to start the show, but here's the reality. I'm sitting here and I'm recording this with no Jordan. I am mere hours away from getting on a plane and flying to Austin, Texas, where me and Jordan will be enjoying seems to make it sound like fun. We will be partaking in and observing the trial that Alex Jones is going to be going through. But unfortunately, I can't take any time off because what happens here? What happens here on Saturday? But does Steve Bannon release a fucking episode of his War Room show where he interviews Alex in order to promote his stupid documentary, Alex's War? And so I feel like I've got to talk about it, but there's no Jordan. And it just leaves me to think, where have all the good men gone and where are all the gods? Where's the streetwise Hercules to fight the rising odds? Isn't there a white knight upon a fiery steed? Late at night I toss and turn and I dream of what I need. I need a hero.
Ah, I am summoned.
What is this?
Thank you, Dan.
Is this Robert Evans?
Robert Evans.
Wow.
Brought magically to life by the power of music.
By the power of Pat Benatar, apparently.
Mm-hmm. Pat Benatar, who I mistakenly thought was the one who had did this song, but I told you to sing it in Pat Benatar style anyway. And here we are. Here I am, summoned.
Well, thank you. Thank you for answering the call of the Bonnie Tyler call for a hero. I appreciate it. We're going to be sitting here. We're going to talk a little bit about Steve Bannon having Alex on. I understand you've covered Bannon a little bit in the past.
Oh boy, yes. As he was known in the Krasenstein's children's book, Weave Bannon, because he was a squirrel that lived in Donald Trump's hair.
Those guys were so creative.
what a time to be an American that was.
Yeah, that's really what cancel culture took from us. Is those
it did.
Dudes?
It did. We lost the Krasensteins, and life has not been worth living for a single second since.
Nature has not healed. Are they active on Truth Social? Do we know if they're on the other?
Probably. They must be. I can't imagine they've given up.
If I were Trump, I'd give them a verified account. Like, yeah, they're great for him.
If I were Trump, I would make them collectively my vice president.
Absolutely.
In exile.
Yep. He sucks. We can all agree on this, right? I mean, Bannon's trash.
I don't like him. And look, here's one of the things I hate most about Steve Bannon, right? We can all agree on team trying to be better people that it's not good to make fun of somebody for their appearance when there's so many things that have nothing to do with their appearance that are actually why they're terrible. But he looks like something a British person would eat.
He looks boiled. Is that
like
is that
one
the
of those
implication?
Puddings? He looks like one of those unsettling puddings that the British
blood
eat.
Sausage.
And I'm not a good enough person not to comment on it.
He looks like a half English breakfast.
Yes, exactly. He looks like a blood sausage in some sort of blancmange
and beans
had a coalesced into a baby. And unfortunately, it also happened that he was like the person who had access to the most money and the deepest understanding of what the internet had changed about human social interactions circa 2014-ish. And he made a lot of hay with that. And I
yeah, and unfortunately, like he was plugged into other folks who could do something with that too. Yes. You know, that sucks.
He's very smart. He gets there's a whole you can find articles and shit about. In fact, there's one this week from Christianity Today that's largely silly, but makes a good point of highlighting the thing about Bannon that's important, which is kind of the understanding he came to about the fantasy worlds that people like to live in. And there's a bit he goes on where he's like, you know, imagine this guy Bob, who's a fucking accountant or some shit, and Bob dies, and you know, some fucking mortician has to make some funeral director has to make up a 5-minute little speech to give at his funeral. And then imagine, like, online, Bob's got this big digital presence in, like, World of Warcraft or something, where he's this great warrior, and 1,000 people show up in the internet to actually, like, celebrate his heroic deeds and all this shit. Like, what would Bob identify more as? What identity is more real? And kind of the thing that Bannon came to is that if you can provide people with these kind of, like, if you can provide people with an outlet for their fantasies that allows them to feel like whatever weird little communities and fantastic worlds they've gotten involved with online are impacting the real world. If you can like make them, if you can make them feel like what they're doing online matters, if you can build them a chance to feel like a hero through doing nothing but sitting at their computer, you could actually get quite a lot done. And I don't know, I'm not explaining it super well, but Bannon translated that into Gamergate.
It sounds like he could just be studying a lot of Alex's shit too. I mean, like convincing the entire audience that like they're fealty to him and you know, supporting his show is a fight against this establishment powers.
There's a lot of what Bannon got that's just old fascism, right? Like that whole thing is pretty old fascism. What Bannon did that was clever was weld it very effectively to sitting on your ass and like harassing people over the internet. Like that was the thing that he figured out, kind of the gamification of like fascist militancy in a way that he was the first person to really lock it down. And it has always been a potent force in American politics ever since.
Well, that sucks.
I have COVID. Otherwise I would have described it a little better, but you get the point. Yeah.
I think considering COVID brain, you did a fantastic job. So I heard that Alex was on Bannon's show and I almost fell out of my chair. I don't like
hearing that.
What's your immediate response to hearing that? I mean, other than like foreboding, does it seem weird to you?
If I had the power to pray in an airstrike, that would have been the spot.
Well, you're never going to get them because they're in that pandemic war room. They're in that bunker.
You have to assume you'd need one of those bunker busters that Fox informed me about when we were going after Saddam.
Yeah, I've never listened to Bannon's show because I don't have time or
That's
the emotional energy. But I listened to this episode and I was shocked that their theme music is kind of it's got a little bit of a rap flair to it. And it's about how like, we're going to take out the CCP and we're going to be there until everyone's dead. Like it's a pretty bizarre vibe that they got going on. They apparently it's, if you go by the theme song, it's mostly about hating China, but that is not what I took away from this screening, this viewing. So Alex is on and it's really bizarre because these two, I don't know if I've ever heard them interact before. They're huge figures in Trump world.
Yeah, I don't think I have either.
And I have some awareness of some beefs, which make this just seem even more unlikely. So I was really excited to tune in and see what we would find. And it turns out, I think a lot of it is a press tour for that documentary Alex's War that's going to be coming out. I don't know if you watched any of the...
I've seen the ads for it. I don't like that Bannon, who again I think has a pretty canny understanding of like what's a productive road to go down propaganda wise. I don't like that he sees turning Alex into a cause celeb as worth his money and time.
Yeah, and especially it's either something bad about the moment right now or a sign of desperation between the both of them. That's kind of how I'm seeing the ball breaking one of those directions.
I mean, I would hope Desper, obviously there is some reason to hope. Like, I don't want to be all doomer here, because like Bannon is actually might do some time in the very near mm-hmm. future. Just got convicted this week as we record this on two counts of fucking around with Congress, both of which could put him in prison for up to a year. Then you've got like Alex, who is in the finding out stage of all of his court cases. So
sure.
I hope it's desperation.
I feel like their circumstances appear desperate enough that it's like, let's see what we can do. You have a little bit of juice. Yeah. I got a little bit of juice. Let's make a cocktail or something.
I don't know that I have. Yeah. I wish I had more hope that this was like the dying gasp of a wounded animal rather than mm-hmm. the step one in me eventually seeing billboards with Alex's face on them in Times Square.
Yeah, that is worrisome, because you have something of a brand rehabilitation in some sense going on. You know, you have this documentary that's seeking to obviously in some way whitewash a lot of Alex's quote unquote mistakes that he's made in his career. And you have Bannon, who, like, as much of a fringe figure as he is, he's on a lot more radio stations than you'd expect. Because he's syndicated with that, like, America's Voice or whatever that thing is called. Yep. And they've grown substantially in the...
Yeah, he's a big player.
Yeah, and Glenn Greenwald was hosting that question and answer thing earlier today about about Alex's documentary. There's a lot of fear. I mean, yeah. Obviously, I don't think Billboard and Times Square, but, you know, something.
Yeah, that's not great.
So let's jump in here. I want to play this first clip for you. This is here where Bannon's bringing Alex in. He's setting the table about his feelings for this interview.
Mm-hmm. Because here's the thing. People say Alex Jones is crazy. He's a conspiracy theory guy. He's a nutcase. You got these rants and all that. What they miss is that this guy's ahead of the curve on so many different topics of signal, not noise. He's one of the really the leaders in describing what transhumanism is, its dangers, and what's happening on this.
So there's code that goes through a bit of this episode that is signal, not noise, which seems like just kind of a Weasley way to say, like, he's wrong about everything. If you listen, he's going to be constantly wrong about stuff. But if you look at the big picture, you could kind of squint.
Yeah, I guess that is an interesting way of, like, Bannon's phrasing of the Alex Jones was right kind of thing.
Yeah, his signal is right. There's a lot of static, you know, he'll throw around a lot of bullshit, be wrong about everything. But yeah, you can trick yourself into thinking that he knows things, and he's right a bunch of the time. And then at the end, you can hear him bring up the transhumanism. And that's because I think that Bannon just wants to be like, all right, look, there's a lot of bullshit. There's a lot of dumb stuff. But Alex has been saying that they're going to put robots inside you for 20 years, which I guess is fair. I mean, that is, you know, the mark of the beast, the chipping of people and stuff is a...
That's like the safest big scale future prediction to make, though, is that like they're going to start putting robot parts in people, because of course they are. Like,
yeah,
not they as in like, but like, yeah, of course people are going to like increasingly do more body modifications like we have throughout history.
Yeah, people are already doing that like themselves. There's DIY stuff.
I have a chip in my hand that has a business card on it. Like, it's just a thing people do because it's neat and they're bored.
Yeah, some people put magnets in their fingers. I don't.
That's right. I have a friend who can use his hand to open the electronic lock to his front door.
Wow. See, there are people who do it, and it's not the government that's doing it, but it is. It is. Mm-hmm. It's a trend that could progress into like some kind of a like robot arms or something, or it might not. Who knows? For years and forever. Science fiction writers, they write about, like, you know, these questions of what does it mean to be human. And obviously this is going to be fertile territory for it. So conspiracy theorists talk about any, it's safe. It's safe. And that's why Bannon wants to like really center things there. And I think that's a good move on his part. I think it's smart to do that instead of some of his other stupid shit about the EU doing 9/11.
Well, that I do agree with.
You think that was the EU?
Yep.
Evidence has borne out.
Don't know this. A lot of people don't know this, but Osama bin Laden and Angela Merkel, same person. Mm.
Whoa, I've never seen them together. Yep. That is true. Mm-hmm. You know, I had this fantasy.
Right. That's exactly right.
I was thinking about, like, if I could feed Glenn Greenwald one question to ask in that Q&A session, it would be, who is the head of the EU right now, and what is their position called? I bet he couldn't name it. Or even swap it out with the UN. Who's in charge of the UN, and what is that position called?
That's always like the actual thing if you really cared about interviewing Alex as like a credible journalist. Just ask him a basic question about like fundamental facts of reality. Like who is running like the EU? How does the EU's like economic system actually work? Like who makes how are decisions like voted on and stuff? You know, any kind of like very basic reality question, he's just not going to be able to answer because he doesn't understand any of it. Like
he can rattle off facts about like the year that something happened or like the name of some document, but
there's all sorts past of that, cool shit. If he was a smarter propagandist, there's all sorts of little facts he could learn that could make him better at that. Like the fact that like a big chunk of the EU's economic administration is done in a building in Berlin that was built for the Luftwaffe. It was like Hermann Goering's offices because the Germans keep repurposing stuff. So if he wanted to make a conspiracy out of that and he knew like three facts about the EU, he could actually put something together, but he doesn't.
God damn it, Robert. This is going to be on his show in a week. It's too good.
And I'm just trying to help the man out. He seems to be having a rough one.
It is tough times. Bannon plays the trailer for Alex's documentary a number of times. And there was one little clip that stuck out to me. I'm going to play that here real quick.
Alex Jones said the Sandy Hook shooting, which claimed the lives of 20 children, was fake.
I try to tell the truth and sometimes I'm wrong. Did the New York Times get in trouble for consciously lying about WMDs that then led to a war, killed tens of thousands in conflict? No.
I think he's playing a little fast and loose with the details about that. Because for one,
yes,
I don't know if it's fair necessarily to say that the New York Times caused the Iraq war. I think the whole argument is that the like Bush administration was planning to do it even like, you know, they long predated. Maybe some sloppy reporting by the New York Times helped justify
it. The New York Times certainly made it easier for them, did not, I think it'd be fair to say, did not use the kind of journalistic rigor they should have. But you know who else didn't use the kind of journalistic rigor they should have on the Iraq war? Glenn Greenwald, who supported
I would, if I were Alex, I would feed him a question to ask Greenwald about that. And also the New York Times in 2004 issued like a huge apology about their coverage and the mistakes that they made. Judith Miller the main person who was making the most, you know, high profile errors, let's say. And she got forced out of the paper in 2005. And has she worked in any meaningful way in journalism since? There are consequences for these folks. It's just Alex doesn't care and he doesn't know. Yeah. And he just makes things up. They were reporting poorly. He makes things up.
Yeah.
There's a bit of a difference.
There is a difference between like, I don't know. There's a difference. I guess when you start to compare the consequences, the size and relative influence of the New York Times makes me think you could probably argue that their failure in the Iraq war did more damage than a lot of the stuff Alex has done. But
I think you definitely could in terms of scale, for sure. It's a different point, but I think that's fair. When you try and get yourself off the hook for your behaviors by being like, well, I didn't cause a war. It's like, I don't know if that's meaningful. Still bad. So Bannon gets around to introducing Alex here. And here Here was what I thought was going to be like the beginning of a really exciting interview.
Alex, thank you very much for joining us. Tell us about this movie. A great filmmaker made this. You're interviewed for it, but other than that, it's their film, correct?
It is. I mean, I've turned down a lot of other documentary offers because it's the establishment. They always lie. But I'd seen some of her films and knew that it was independent. And it shows me in a bad light and a good light because, I mean, I'm a real person just like you. But it's hard to come on here, Steve.
Ooh, it's hard to come on here, Steve. That's an exciting line. Now, the reason that was really exciting for me was because I know that Alex hates Steve Bannon.
He should. He's repeatedly, as I've learned through your show, attacked him.
Yes, almost constantly for years. Yeah. He's a scapegoat that Alex has used to like try and get Trump off the hook for things. And so I got really excited and I decided that I would put together a compilation of Alex talking shit about Steve Bannon.
Well, I heard Bannon was forced out for leaking, but I didn't want to put out rumors, but I didn't get that from a White House source. And now the president says that's the case.
I was on your show a couple of months ago and I said that Steve Bannon was a complete sociopath and eventually he would trap himself in his lies and his collusions with his colleagues. I am for the indictment, conviction, and prison for Steve Bannon. The reason is very simple. Bannon is what we call a self-promoter. A nicer term or a different term would be a BS artist.
He just sits there and goes, oh, I love Trump, and then sits back and watches his attempt to blow up the White House politically. He lights the fuse. Walks off the safe distance. He goes, is it snowing outside? No, it's dandruff. Ketchup stains down the front of him. I'm the Liberty Movement. I came with money and took over Breitbart after he died. I'm the kingpin. I'm the god. I'm the Liberty Movement. Meanwhile, he's behind the scenes leaking everything to the New York Times, the Washington Post. And by the way, leaking BS and running around, we now know, to the FBI, fawning and agreeing with the Russia investigation.
I take no delight in Steve Bannon's new problems, but they don't surprise me because we know definitively that he directly contradicted his testimony at my trial.
Stephen Miller basically took our research, our work, and which is great, and presented it to the president. It got adopted by Bannon. Bannon didn't come up with all this. Bannon is a movie screenplay writer. Okay, they wrote a screenplay off this show. That's why the left's so pissed. They've got all the phones tapped. They know. And they know the White House still listens every day. Okay? But I'm not a screenwriter. I'm Alex Jones from Texas. I'm for real. You understand? I'm 100% for real. I mean all this.
And Alex, I don't know if you know this, but this is firsthand from the people involved. Steve is working with Mike Cernovich and Jack Posobiec now. I know people who are working directly with them, and they told me their goal was to destroy you.
Steve Bannon, traitor.
I don't like Stephen Bannon. He's done some nasty stuff. He bear false witness against Roger
Jesus
Stone. The hindsight is 2020. All I can say is this. Steve Bannon is so damn bad. You see, the sociopaths and psychopaths and or weak people that have been abused themselves and they go out and do it to others, they feel like they're owed something. I find a lot of times that's really what it is. I think Bannon's kind of one of those. He wants to show everybody he's the big man. He's the tough guy. He's the leader. He's in control. And he's got to overthrow everybody around him so he can feel like he's big. He's number one.
Yep. So, I mean, it's Jesus. Pretty consistent.
I hope he does his Steve Bannon voice in this interview with Steve Bannon.
I hope he asks him about that plot to destroy Alex that Posobiec and Cernovich were working on with Bannon.
It would be fun if they just had like a frank talk about Steve Bannon's plot to destroy him.
Sure.
Like two
or
teams
the fact
chatting after a football's game.
Or what about like Steve Bannon perjuring himself in order to get Roger Stone locked up? What about that? I mean, they've said that's definitively in InfoWars lore. Steve Bannon lied to get Roger Stone thrown in prison.
Yeah, but given how much money Stone was costing InfoWars, are we sure Alex thinks that's a bad thing?
I mean, if the North Korean boat story had stuck, I think Alex would want to see Roger silenced in some way, taken to prison. Also, I love the idea. I was going back through some of these Bannon clips. I didn't realize that Alex had suggested that he was a sociopath who had been abused, and that was why he was on this power trip. That's particularly, there's a flair there, a panache for Alex.
Yeah, I agree.
So when I heard him say it's hard to come on, I was hoping, like, all right, we're going to air it out. This is going to be great.
Yeah.
Because for years, he's hated Bannon. But of course, he just proceeds to kiss Bannon's ass in a way that is just embarrassing. I think if you listen to the end of this clip, you'll hear Steve Bannon himself being embarrassed by Alex's behavior.
But it's hard to come on here, Steve, because I've admired you. I knew you were the brain behind a lot of what Trump was able to do, and you've had the most courage of anybody out there standing up to this January 6th fraud and really bringing America back. So it's hard to come on your show and then talk about myself here. It's surreal with what you did, not backing down to the committee and them and their kangaroo court and how they wouldn't let you cross-examine people. I'm facing 3 rigged lawsuits run by Democrats, same ones in Travis County that indicted Rick Perry and Tom DeLay. I'm not allowed to say I'm innocent at my trial next week that starts. They put an order out. You cannot say you're innocent. You cannot say it's rigged. And you can, I mean, it's insane. I'm supposed to sit there and not talk and not say I'm innocent. This is the end of America. So if they can destroy Steve Bannon and Alex Jones, they can destroy you. So I'm just honored. And I'm not gushing here just to gush. I mean, I don't gush. I'm gushing because literally we are in the arena. And you and I, and you at a greater level, I got to say, they are so scared of you. And so I admire your work. And I have, you know, really, really pushed people that have, you know, attacked you and stuff to not, because they're wrong. And when they do, they're buying into the globalist propaganda. Mm-hmm. So I am really, this is a big bucket list being on your show. And I'm so proud of the fact that it's exploded. And everybody talks about it. I'm at the grocery store. I'm at church. Everywhere. Almost every day, people go, man, I really love your show. And I love Steve Bannon. Did you see this? Did you see that? And I don't get, like, envious. I feel good when I go to sleep at night. Like, if they put me in prison or kill me next week, at least Steve Bannon's out there and this team you've put together.
But here, the reason I want to have you on is the film. Look, the film's a powerhouse film.
Ew. That's you know, you spend 2 minutes talking about, like, how it's your dream to talk to this person and they're your hero. And then they just sort of like, I wanted to talk about your film. That hurts a little, right? I mean, it's not what you want.
No, that doesn't seem ideal.
So what do you think about this turnaround here?
Well, I mean, it seems like the thing Alex always does, which is that he's capable of having a wide variety of opinions, largely negative, about other people who are prominent until those people are willing to talk with him for 30 seconds, at which point they become his favorite person. It's like, you know, it's how we can go from threatening Joe Rogan's children to talking about how he's leading the evolution of the human mind or some shit.
You're second only to Tucker. I never threatened your children.
That it is. He hasn't done that with Tucker though, right? I'm gonna guess that, like, because obviously he's gone back and forth on Rogan, basically everybody. Has he ever said bad shit about Tucker?
Yeah, back in the day, back when he was like more of a neocon bow tie guy. For sure.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. Tucker did used to be kind of. Anyway,
Crossfire days, Alex had, but the, back then Tucker wasn't that big of a deal. And so, like, it didn't come up often, but I know that there was a little bit of disdain between them. But Tucker, even back then, Tucker did, like, he came on InfoWars once or twice and it wasn't like super hostile, but it definitely was not like, this guy gets it. He knows everything. It was more like, all right, I'm going to talk to this neocon for a little bit. And we'll see if we can get him to wake up. And then he wouldn't show back up. But I think Alex knows better than to threaten Tucker. Tucker is way, way more of a hold of the, like, weird Trump zeitgeist.
Yeah. Well, I also think he's kind of scared of Tucker, like most of us all are. But that may be me reading some into Alex.
What do you think he's scared of Tucker doing? Like labeling him a globalist?
I think he's scared. Yeah, I mean, I think he's definitely aware that Tucker could do damage to him. But I also think more than anything, he's scared that Tucker's going to render him completely irrelevant.
True.
Like, I see kind of, I feel like there's a little desperation in how he praises Tucker, if that makes sense. I mean, you know the man better than I do, but that's just kind of what I've read.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, as much desperation as there is in, I go to sleep at night comfortable knowing that if I go to jail, Steve Bannon is out there. You know, there's desperation all around. And some of it is like a recognition of being able to siphon publicity. And then, yes, some of it is probably in a recognition of his obsolescence. But he's been obsolete since the internet really picked up as much as it did. Like, YouTube largely hindered his stranglehold on like gatekeeping conspiracy shit. But Tucker gets to the old folk and says things really softly. He brings extremism into a digestible paragraph.
He's just actually better at doing Alex shit than Alex ever was.
Mm-hmm. Well, he makes it easier to swallow. And I mean, I think that's what you hear from like all the Nazi types, you know, who are like, Tucker is just doing our shit better. You know, you'll hear that in message boards from time to time. So here's Steve Bannon embarrassing himself severely.
The point I don't think people get about you, we do at the War Room, and I personally do because I followed you for years, is that you're not just a man of action. The guy that they see on that show every night, the guy they see at the bullhorn, the guy that's taking leadership and saying, hey, you know, I'm like in the first tank and we'll drive this. As much and as important as that leadership is, the true thing that you've done, which is stunning, if you look at the evidence of that and the facts, you are one of the great thinkers of this. That is very rare. You've got to go back almost to the revolutionary generation.
Yeah, man. Alex is one of the great thinkers of our time. Politically.
Yeah.
Culturally. Spiritually.
Musically.
Ecclesiastically. Sure. Musically, yeah.
He's got me listening to Duran Duran again, man.
Oh, no. By the way,
found a pretty dope cover of Hungry Like the Wolf by Real Big Fish the other day. Would love to hear that on Alex's show, but I will
cut it in. I'll splice it together for you. Is that new? That Real Big Fish cover?
It's years old, but it's excellent. You can find it on the YouTubes and the Spotify's.
Did they do the Less Than Jake thing where they just became basically like a cover band?
I mean, I have not caught up. I don't know when the most recent of their albums was, but they've definitely got a lot of covers. I mean, that is the natural journey of every great ska musician is to doing ska, because the secret of music that's like at the core of all of human creation is that every song is better as a ska version of that song.
Yeah, everything is better with...
Absolutely. Oh, Streetlight Manifesto did a cover of Such Great Heights that is... very, very fun.
Mm. Well, I mean, like, Less Than Jake became a cover band. In theory, Real Big Fish has become a cover band. Like, Me First and the Gimme Gimmes were the ones who got it. They came out the gate a cover band. Anyway, I saw the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones at Riot Fest last year, and it depressed me. That was right before Dickie Barrett became an anti-vaxxer.
I don't think anybody needs to be listening to the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones after that George Floyd album they put out.
This was before that, I think.
I know. I hope.
It definitely was before I was aware of that. So Bannon loves InfoWars, and he loves Alex. To the extent, I don't know if you'll believe this, Robert, but he claims that he listens every day. Do you believe that? Yeah, me neither. But here he is saying it.
You know, people that have watched this show know me over the years. You know, the Financial Times, The Economist, we go through. That's what we play every day. We start with MSNBC and CNN clips. We're not playing conservative right-wing news. So I'm a huge believer in information and in collecting information. And I watch the InfoWars every day and follow Alex Jones closely. You know why? He can put you ahead of the curve. And he's been demonized as a conspiracy theorist, right? I got to tell you, this book, The Great Reset and the War for the World, is the left and the mainstream media are going to have to sit there, and we've got to force them to respond to this book. This book is that important.
Look, no force necessary. I mean, I'm not the left nor the mainstream media, but I'll handle this book. Yeah. So Alex has a book coming out.
I'm excited for you to handle this.
Yeah, I've heard rumblings of this, and there's been talk of it, but Alex is apparently coming out with a book, and I think it's getting rushed out because there's a bit of a blitz going on right now, and the timing is not suspicious in terms of his trial happening starting on the 25th and going probably until the beginning of August or so. So on the 29th, you have his documentary coming out, and then his book is supposed to come out in early August. So I think there's a little bit of a, like, let's have something else to talk about kind of vibe going on. There's a couple things I think about this book. The first is that there is 0% chance that Alex wrote this book.
Yeah, I mean, he's too rich to write a book, right? Like, there's a certain amount of money.
That's not the problem that I would have. I don't think that's the...
Think he can read?
Yes! No, I don't know if you can write a book by skimming, but like, I think you have a point.
Yes.
Really rich people will have like ghostwriters write something or whatever, but like, Alex is so fucking lazy. He couldn't write an article on his own website.
No.
He has a team of people to do that. I have no faith he could. I mean, the last book he wrote, in theory, I'm not even sure if he wrote that one, was like 15 years ago. He wrote some like a 9/11 book. Like,
yeah, way and back. Again, I don't think he wrote that.
Probably like, not. Jason Burmess wrote it or something.
Well, and I wouldn't be surprised, given him being the guy that he is, if he does a lot of like dictating. That's how Hitler wrote his book, you know. Some people have too much, like to walk around and talk too much to actually write a book. And so those people have their Rudolf Hess or their whatever guy wrote Alex's book for him.
Well, if that's the case, I can't wait to read it, because the person who could transcribe the nonsense that Alex is going to have thrown out. I mean, the syntax is going to be revolutionary. I think that the great English professors will struggle to deal with Alex's run-on sentences, Hemingway-esque run-on sentences, I predict. Yeah, I think that book's going to be dumb. It's just about the Great Reset, so it's complaining about Klaus Schwab and that Noah Harari guy. And
That's the guy who wrote Sapiens, right? He's real scared about that guy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
the futurist Sapiens du jour.
Kind of boring, but that's my take for the day.
I'm going to guess that your assessment is not going to match Alex's in this forthcoming book.
No. Yeah, I don't know. I thought it was kind of boring. Like most books that Barack Obama recommends, I didn't like it very much.
Mm. I don't think I've ever read it. I don't know. I don't gravitate towards the genre of futurist writings too much. Like, I would rather...
Sapiens wasn't really very futurist. If I'm thinking of the right Sapiens, it was just kind of like a history of hominids. Noah Harari, yeah.
Okay, maybe I'm just categorizing it wrong, because that's like
You're thinking of, so I have not read this book. He wrote another book called Homo Deus or Deus.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm guessing it's Deus. Yeah, that's, I think, his futurist book. Okay, that makes sense.
That's the sort of cubbyhole that he exists in with Alex.
Yeah.
So I just assume like pretty much all of his career revolved around that. So yeah, this book is going to suck, I'm sure. But I'm excited for it. I will definitely do a protracted series on it as soon as it comes out. That turns out to be exactly what Bannon thinks I can't do.
I tell you what, can you hang on? We'd love to keep you for one more segment if we could.
As long as you want, Steve. This is awesome.
Okay, we got Alex Jones. The book is The Great Reset and the War for the World. This is a seminal work. Yes, I know Madeline Peltz and our marketing director over at Media Matters is going to melt down. I dare anybody to go through this book and read it and see the references that are cited and the deconstruction he does of some of these major works by major. This is not intellectual slumming.
Dare accepted. 100%. Yeah. I accept this. I know that I'm not cool like Media Matters, but I'll handle this, Bannon, and I'll get back to you. I'm sure he'll have me on to discuss.
No, I think there's a pretty good shot of you getting on Steve Bannon's show. And if that happens, you're going to need to plunge the dagger of Tel Megiddo into the glowing spot at the base of his belly. In order
it's marked
to
by a ketchup upon, stain.
Yeah, that will finally bring the Kali Yuga.
I was looking at his guest list, and I think I fit right in. I mean, you got, like, Jack Posobiec. You got, now
and you
Alex.
And Jack are such close friends.
We're so tight. We ate at the same restaurant once. I mean, he pretended that it was a child molestation den, and I just thought it had pretty good pizza. But, hey, you know, we're close. Robert Malone,
Sonic, right?
Yes, that's right. The Sonic just outside Columbia, Missouri. It's a mess. That place is haunted for sure. So this interview is, I'll be honest, there's a lot of content in it that would just be really pointless and boring for like anybody who listens to our podcast. There's like, you know, Alex will throw out things like why the future doesn't need us or Eco-Science by John P. Holdren. Like, he'll throw these things out as if he's, like, making an actual argument, but it's just sort of scattershot references. So I don't particularly care about that too much. I want to focus on how sad this is. Alex hates Steve Bannon. Bannon has never acknowledged Alex. And here the two of them desperately try to compliment each other. This is two men brought low towards each other.
Well, you've been through this. President Trump's been through this. And what they do is they fear populists. They fear loyal Americans that believe in the, you know, America and are promoting it because they know that's going to be popular. So they have to shut that down. Now, they can demonize Steve Bannon and destroy Steve Bannon. They can demonize and destroy Alex Jones or Donald Trump. And I'm not trying to put myself in that league, but that's the league. It's like, you know, Trump, Steve Bannon, Alex Jones are the main target's kind of going down from there. I think you're probably a bigger target than I am because you're respected and are also, you have your intelligence background and they know was the brain trust behind a lot of Trump's successes. And so I'm not lavishing you. It's just true.
No, this is where I disagree with this, because I think like Trump, you have a, you know, as Bernard Charles said, only connect. You have a way of connecting with the working class in this country, in the middle class in this country, that is very powerful. I mean, one of my guilty pleasures is watching your rants, and they're absolutely amazing. They're incredible. You have a way of connecting like Trump has a way of connecting. That is their biggest fear. Their biggest fear is the education and enlightenment, the awakening of that army, of what I call the army of the awakened. And they will take, I think Tucker and I are far in back of that, because you and Trump have a way of connecting, a hard connection with that. That is, you can't coach that, right? That's a God-given talent. That's just native charisma, and you have it. That's where the
well, I don't want to say that I've got.
Just walk me through what are they trying to do right now? They've done everything possible.
So that they're, you know, you got this nice vibe of you're awesome. No. Wait. You're awesome.
You and Trump are on the same God-given wavelength connection to the real folk.
Yeah, to the common people. You understand. You have this organic connection. And now I would suggest that maybe it's that him and Trump are like, they live in the fraud. You know, they live in that manipulation so much that people connect to it more easily. That could be part of it. And someone like Tucker doesn't really. I was trying to think. I was trying to think about what connects Alex to common people. Like, what is it? He's been in media for 20-something years. He is a millionaire. He has multiple homes.
What does?
He lives in one of the liberal enclaves of Austin, Texas. He is friends with celebrities. He's having Steve Bannon tell him that he's one of the great thinkers since the revolutionary era. He runs away from his fans when they confront him on the street because they scare him. Like he has armed Blackwater security everywhere. Like he has a tank. There's nothing. He just has a Texan accent. I think he did, but that was just that's similar to what a lot of Americans are dealing with, having to sell their extremist vehicles. Having to sell
their tanks, absolutely. I wish more people were selling their tanks because then I might be able to buy one. But you know, you said something a second ago about what connects Alex to common people. And I know what you meant by that, but now all I'm thinking about is Alex getting together with Ben Folds, like Shatner did, and doing a cover of Pulp's Common People, which I think Alex actually could knock out of the park.
If Alex does lose everything, we need to get him a record deal to do a Shatner-type album.
Yeah, exactly.
But also very loungy, so like in between songs, or, you know, there's got to be a little bit of banter. You know, you got to have
a little bit of spoken word. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the other option is to just have Alex do an exact perfect word for word replica of Shatner's album Has Been. So like Alex is singing that song about Shatner finding his wife dead in the pool and about being the washed up former Star Trek star and stuff.
I feel like you could talk Alex into doing that. He hates Shatner now. Mm-hmm. So like he would do to get back at him.
Yeah, try to do a better job than Bill.
Yeah, exactly.
That album is fucking perfect. But
I think Alex has Steve Bannon is complimenting him quite a bit, but I think he has the potential to be like Paul Stanley level stage banter kind of guy. Like really make it its own thing. He could revolutionize the art of saying dumb shit in between songs.
No, absolutely.
So we got one last clip here. It was not a very long interview. It's just kind of a puff piece, the promotion for the book that's not out and doesn't have a release date, and the documentary. So it's basically just that. And, you know, I when this episode comes out, I will already be in Austin for the trial. And here's Alex telling Bannon about this. And everything Alex is saying is total bullshit here. This is just offensive.
I have the motions in limine at Infowars.com of the judge's order of the first of three rigged Sandy Hook trials where I've already been found guilty. I've been defaulted when I gave them everything and more, which they used them as a blueprint to further debank us and deplatform us. And the judge put in the order for the trial where I'm guilty that I cannot say I'm innocent, says word for word, may not say you're innocent in any way. Well, if that was a murderer, you know, caught with dead bodies in my basement, I could get up and say I'm innocent to the jury. I could say I'm not guilty. No, I am guilty, and I can't cross-examine anybody, and I can't raise the First Amendment, and I can't say the trial is rigged. And so, but then we're ordered to have this trial, or I'll be held in contempt. She did $1 million fine a month ago. Court of Appeals turned it around in one day and said, pay it. I paid $1 million and I'm out of money. They finally run me to ground. I paid $1 million on Monday that literally brought the company down to like $300,000 in the bank. But that's okay. Listeners are coming in and supporting us. But this is a real war because you nailed it. You stole my thunder because I understand why. You want to show people this is Veritas. We're simpatico because the truth is true. They hate
Bannon. He's using the fancy
words.
They
hate Tucker Carlson. They hate Donald Trump. They hate me because we are populist. We love the people. The people get that. They can see it. They can feel it. And they've seen what we've gone through. And they don't want them to have a spirit. So they think if they can break us and destroy us, that's their symbol of the American people. Trump always says, look, they got to get through me to get to you. And it's totally true. We have decided to stand up because we love America and we can't stand seeing this happen. We're not heroes. We just can't roll over. It's like being raped. And so they see us standing up and they can break us and smash us. They can do it. And this is not my rights that are being robbed. It's all of our rights. I mean, when Steve Bannon cannot cross-examine people at his own trial, in a rigged DC situation, we are all having our rights stolen. And when I can't say I'm innocent,
oh boy,
and can't say I'm bankrupt and can't say there's three trials coming up, literally, she says we can say almost nothing, but we have to be there. And so that's where this is. And again, I'm just blessed that it's not criminal.
He will not stop talking.
I really don't like him comparing him after like half a decade in court having to pay money for slandering the families of dead children to being a rape victim. I dislike that, Dan. I don't think you should be able to do that.
I agree with you. And he compares that, he uses that comparison a lot. And I will say that I don't often include it on our show because of it being usually obviously always
deeply offensive. Yeah.
But also usually, even if you tracked the thinking, it doesn't make sense a lot of the time, from a conceptual standpoint. But I think there's important things to remember here beyond that too. And that is, one, Bannon chose not to do a defense. He could have done a defense. He did not. All of the stuff Alex is saying are the products of his decisions. He had every possibility to be able to raise a First Amendment defense. He didn't do it. He got fined $1 million because he kept sending incompetent corporate representatives and the judge ran out of options. He can say that the trial is a staged, rigged thing, but he'll be taken out of court, probably held in contempt, just like anybody else in a courtroom would be. He's not special. There's no special victimhood here. It's the product of his choices, because he knew that if he went to trial, he would lose. And if he went to trial, he would lose, and it would be embarrassing. But if he just decided not to participate, he'd end up losing by default. And this would be the situation we were in. And he could be like, oh, if only I had my day. If only they allowed me to defend myself.
Yeah.
It's all just bullshit. It's the same thing Bannon's doing. And it's the same thing Roger Stone did in his trial. All of them don't defend themselves in the time when they're given the opportunity to, because they know they don't have shit.
Yeah, because there's fucking no way to defend their behavior. So their only defense is stretching it out as long as possible, I guess, and hoping that once again the system does not actually penalize them in any meaningful way. Who knows? Bannon will probably get a week in a fucking resort prison or some shit.
Yeah, it's hard to fault somebody for thinking you won't get any consequences based on the lack of consequences.
They don't usually. Yeah.
Yeah. You just kick your feet kick up dust and kind of just hope that eventually you'll have some resolution where you don't have to reveal more information that would be more destructive to your industry. It sucks. So I'll be in Austin. I'll be watching the proceedings where Alex is not allowed to bring up the First Amendment. He's not allowed to call it a show trial. He can't say that he's innocent because he's already been found guilty. So it's irrelevant to the case. So he's lost by default. I wonder if Alex will actually show up to the courtroom. That's something that I'm not sure about.
Does he have to?
I don't think he physically has to.
Is it an option for him to not show up?
I would imagine he could just send his lawyers. He doesn't have to testify or anything, I don't think.
Yeah, I mean, if he doesn't have to, I would have to guess he's probably not going to show up, right?
But then the attention, the possibility of it being, but he can say shit outside the courtroom.
Well, yeah, I guess there's that. Maybe it'll be worth it for him to show up outside, or to show up so that he can go outside of the courtroom and
he did a fucking impromptu press conference at his custody hearing a couple years back.
Oh God. Yeah. No, I had forgotten about that. Okay. Well, we'll see.
I could see him doing a little rally outside the courthouse or something, trying to promote his stupid documentary. But yeah, we'll see. We'll be posting episodes throughout the time there in Austin, trying to find some relevant folks to interview perhaps, and giving some trial updates. So that'll be fun. Robert, thank you so much for joining me. Do you have any closing thoughts about this disgraceful exchange?
I mean, number one thought is that it's worrying that Alex and Steve are getting closer together, because those really aren't two worlds that I like being tied close together. However, Steve Bannon is really dangerous, and I worry about him a lot. And Alex Jones has a Mr. Magoo-like ability to trip up people around him and get them into terrible, terrible trouble.
That's
so that
true.
Could be fun. So possibly this will go well. More than anything, Dan, I'd like people to listen to the Ben Folds William Shatner album Has Been, particularly the cover of Common People that Shatner does on it, because it fucks.
I understand next week you're going to have a three-part Behind the Bastards about that album.
It is. It is. The bastard of that album is that I can't stop singing it.
You just have everyone around you label you the bastard for incessantly singing Common People.
Well, they're probably going to label me the bastard because I think Shatner said something fucked up this week. I refuse to read any new news stories about Shatner. It doesn't matter.
Okay.
He is an old man and will be dead soon. It's fine if he believes.
I'm unaware of anything past him going to space. That is where I checked out.
That was the last thing I needed from him.
Yeah.
You
have fulfilled your narrative arc and we're done.
Yeah. I sent him a letter the other day saying, "You're allowed to die, William."
You let him go.
I let him go. I let him go.
That's big of you. Well, we should let ourselves go and wrap this up. But thank you again. People can find your podcast, Behind the Bastards. Fantastic show.
Thank you. And thank you for summoning me with the power of song.
I am no longer in need of a hero, but thank you for being one for me. We will talk again soon.
Yay.
Ah, what a fine interview. Ah, that was what a lot of fun to talk about how stupid Steve Bannon is. And oh wow, he's talking to Alex Jones. God, can you believe it, Celine? Meow. I know you keep it quiet. You know, I have to pretend to meow for you. Ah, just gonna kick back with a nice rattler here. Just a nice treat myself. You know, I'm gonna be taking this trip. I deserve a little bit of a kickback. No, nice 2% beer. You know, that's about what I want right about now. Make me a
Dan,
little bit.
Dan Friesen.
Hey,
Dan,
whoa.
Mark Bankston here. Mark Bankston, do you have a few minutes to talk about the Sandy Hook drop?
For sure. I mean, I was just about to enjoy this nice beer that's really just lemonade, but I would love to have a chat with you.
Let's do it, man. Let's do it.
How you doing?
You know what? Pretty even keeled, you know, heading into the 4-year buildup of the most surreal trial in American memory that's going to be watched by the entire world. I'm really chill about it. It's really,
yeah,
really
it
good.
Seems like it. You got a laid back vibe. I have to be honest. I am not thrilled with my radio theater that I just did there.
Okay. We could second take, man.
I'm very self-conscious. No, I don't think the second take is going to be any better than the first.
Okay.
But it's nice to talk to you. I know that.
Hey, edit this all you want. Yeah, go for it.
I'm going to be
in
Austin.
I don't mean to throw your whatever. Okay, go for it.
We're recording this on Saturday evening. I'm going to be there in person tomorrow. But I wanted to sit down if it was at all possible, and thankfully it is, to talk a little bit about what people can expect of the coming trial. It's actually, it looks like it's going to happen. There's no more bankruptcy stunts.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, look, if you know what to expect, tell me. I'm waiting with bated breath. I'd love to know.
I expect a dry heat.
there is no way to tell what's about to happen, folks. I'd like to say that it's a nice planned, coordinated event, but I'm dealing with one of the most unpredictable people in living memory. And yeah, who knows what's going to happen? I think I know how it's going to go down, but who knows?
I mean, there's one thing that is the preparation and the law aspect of it and the trial, and I think you probably have your ducks in a row in terms of that. The thing that just blows my mind is that we have this case is starting on Monday, so that's the 25th, and then on the 29th, Alex is releasing his documentary.
Oh, well, I mean, I guess I'll take a break from trial and take a look at that. Are you like, what? Yeah. Like, do you really think you're going to preempt the trial of the century? Because stop it. Jesus.
Yeah, he's like, he's trying to steal focus.
I don't know. I saw him come out and do that Q&A with Glenn Greenwald, like right on the eve of our trial. And I'm like, really, this is your best attempt to grab publicity after I've been absolutely smoking you in the entire global media for 4 years? You come out with the guy who made the incel movie and
it's the guy
who almost got Snowden arrested, and you're gonna like okay, really?
Well, to be fair, I don't think Greenwald's that involved in the documentary. I think he was just a gun for hire for that Q&A. But
just shows up for the Q&A, sure. But no, it's ridiculous.
I was watching a little bit of that earlier before we started chatting, and the director was sitting in between Greenwald and Alex, and she had her head down for long stretches of time, seemed to not want to be there. I'm not sure if I was reading too much into the body language, but can't blame her. So yeah, well,
lie down of dogs and you get fleas. You know what I'm saying? I don't know. My mama told me that in Texas, but I don't know if that's a regional thing or not. But yeah, no, feeling good. I feel like if he's burning time doing that, like I don't know what's going on over there, man. It's a mess. And when they walk into this courtroom, look, I think a legitimate expectation is they're going to try to sabotage things. They're going to try to cause a mistrial or some garbage like that, and we'll see how it goes. But
if past, you know, one thing prelude, I got to say,
you know, exactly. If you know anything about the suit, what you can predict is that anything you think is about to happen is exactly what's not going to happen. The one thing I do have to say about it, though, it's like the comfort I have going into this is we have a trial judge who I know is not going to tolerate nonsense, right? Like, we've been waiting 4 years to get this thing tried, just dead set, determined to get it tried. Jones is in courtroom theatrics aren't going to be an issue.
Like, he needs a judge. He needs he needs somebody who's like, I'm going to see where you're going with this.
Yeah, I'll allow it. Yeah, yeah. Here you go. Go for it. No, but that's not what's going to happen.
There's a question that I had that I wanted to run by you. And that is actually, it came up earlier when I was talking to Robert. And that is that, do you know if Alex is actually going to have to be there?
Have to be there. That's an interesting question.
I was thinking that there's an entire possibility that he wouldn't even need to show up. Like, the lawyers could just conceivably show up, right?
Like, so I'm thinking about how to answer this question because I'm starting to get asked it a lot. And so let's start with a couple suppositions. One is the entire world who is paying attention to this thing damn well expects Alex Jones to show up to his trial. Damn well expects him to testify. Like, that's part and parcel with what this is, right?
It's kind of anticlimactic for anybody who likes Alex if he doesn't.
Right. It's anticlimactic for me. It's anticlimactic for everybody.
You want the hero shot, you know, basically.
Right, well, or whatever that shot is. But think about it this way, right? Like, this jury at some point, regardless of where they're going in their case, they're going to want to see Alex Jones on the stand. They're going to want to see that. And whether that happens or not, the interesting thing is I'm not in control of that necessarily. Like, that's not a thing I govern. Mm-hmm. And if Alex Jones decides he wants to kick back and just decide he's not going to show up to this trial, look, I don't have the power to stop him under these circumstances right now.
And so case, like, you don't really need to have him on testify or anything. Like, you don't, you have no reason that you need to call him to the stand to make your case.
I mean, look, at this point, I don't need anything. I mean, I don't mean to be glib about it, but like, look, I think as people who followed the show before know, the default judgment that resulted to us is, while theatrical and climactic to the case, is meaningless. It doesn't mean a damn thing. There's not like you were going to walk into this trial and people were going to go, that's not defamation. That's not intentional infliction of emotional distress. Like, that was already decided. So, like, that's done. Mm-hmm. And like, all you got to do is press play, right? Yeah. Like, there's not, I don't want to put it to, in other words, what I want to say is this is out of my hands at this point. Like, it's not, you can say all you want about how you perform in a trial, and there's going to be lots of cameras on me, and there's going to be lots of people judging me from that respect. But as far as what I can do to those 12 people in the box and the decision they're going to make, that's out of my hands, because this is purely about press play and let them react. There's going to be 12 jurors, and they're going to come up with a number. And what I'm going to as much as I, in my personal life and around all this, I have a lot of a shaken faith in our systems and institutions. One sure. thing I, and particularly in jury trials, I really do. I have a lot of cynicism, I guess is how you could put it. I've sure. built up after seeing how juries react to certain things. And sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad. But one thing I can say is this particular trial is so unique. There's never been anything like what Jones did. This is what we would call in law a matter of first impression, right? Uh-huh. Like this is the first time a jury is going to have to look at this kind of conduct. 10 years of somebody torturing parents and murdered children, they're going to have to come up with a number of what it's worth. And whatever number they come up with is the correct number, right? Yeah. Because not either party in this courtroom, I am convinced, is going to have much of an effect of what they decide that correct number is. They will be faced with what is basically undisputed facts, and they will face the same controversy and national outrage that has consumed part of the country for so many years on this, and they will come up with that number. And yeah. I'm kind of hands off. I've gotten the case as well as positioned I could ever get a position for trial, and at this point I put it in the hands of those 12 Austin jurors.
And I mean, you have a lot of stuff to press play on. Based on
yeah, that's true.
Based on even the deposition stuff that we've covered, I imagine just seeing the reaction of people to a lot of that would be
actually
amazing.
One of my most rewarding things I do on this case is for the first time when I show somebody a document, an email, a piece of deposition footage that they didn't know, and their jaws on the floor.
A clip of Daria, and they right. run away.
Right. Right. Exactly. Or, you know, some of the people that you're going to be seeing at this trial, and I'm going to give kind of like a, you know, okay, so I know your viewers love the deposition episodes. Those yeah. just have been, they just love them.
It's baffling to me, but yes, they
actually,
can't get enough.
Actually, you know what I'm going to say? Because if you listen to this, depositions dry, they're on YouTube, they're rather dry. Mm-hmm. But, dude, I don't want to like, I'm tooting your horn or whatever, but like the analysis y'all do of in between questions, it's just so, it's so great.
We should just become a deposition cast.
A deposition cast. Exactly. But what I want to let your viewers know is there's going to be a bunch of deposition testimony clips played at this trial that they've never seen before. There's
really?
Going to be a bunch of new stuff. And I'd like to preview that.
This raises the question. Yeah. After the trial, are there going to be a bunch of depositions that will be public that weren't before? Because if so, deposition cast 2022.
Because here's the thing.
This is our new
direction. I want to let your viewers know this. They have not seen or heard, because of the different rules up in Connecticut, they haven't heard any Lafferty difference. They have never heard Chris Matty depose a witness.
True.
They've never heard Matt Blumenthal depose a witness. They've never heard that. And
we've seen a little bit of the transcripts that have come out.
Yeah, you've seen a little bit. A little bit, right? But you're going to see a couple of things in this one. One is the one that everybody already knows from your show is you're going to see a small clip played during the trial of Brittany Paz. Mm-hmm. And we're going to be hearing from her as the corporate representative. And then you're going to hear another deposition from this case that nobody's ever heard before. And that's Robert Jacobson. And Robert Jacobson was the former video editor for nearly 15 years at InfoWars. And he will testify some very, very surprising things about what he knew and did inside of InfoWars.
That would be fascinating because he's already said some pretty bad stuff that is out in public. Yeah,
exactly. So, and I'm being careful because obviously I don't want to disclose things that are in confidential depositions that will become public at the moment they're at trial.
Yeah.
But there are, yes, Robert Jacobson is going to be testifying by deposition, and that's going to be a very surprising deposition for a lot of people. The other is, I know a lot of people know from the saga, InfoWars reporter Dan Bedondi.
Oh, yeah.
Nobody's ever seen Dan Bedondi. The Kraken.
Yeah.
And believe me, that's a very entertaining deposition. And his
Someone deposed Dan Bedondi?
They did.
What?
Dan, they did.
Wow.
And I'll tell you, I hope that deposition does become one day fully public because we're going to be playing clips from it. But the entire thing is as rewarding as you might expect it to be. It is really something to see that man deposed. I often commented that he's a police officer's dream because you ask him one question, he answers six. It's fantastic. He just does not have an off switch.
That's the vibe I got from seeing some of his interviews that he did back when he worked at InfoWars. It seemed like, this guy will talk.
Another surprise guest will be Adon Salazar. Nobody has seen him deposed. And Adon Salazar is one of the chief writers at InfoWars on Sandy Hook topics.
Yeah.
It's very interesting.
And still like a major figure there. I don't know if I've ever seen his face.
Exactly.
He followed me on Twitter for a little while. And then once we mentioned it, he stopped following us on Twitter. So there was something sneaky going on there, but
absolutely.
Yeah,
he's strange.
I don't want to say this because, like, you know, I don't want to put this on you at all, but just my personal perception of him is he seems like a shithead. I don't know if the deposition will color my feelings at all, but he seems like one of the worst.
I will describe him more in terms that the plaintiff's pleadings would describe him as deeply irresponsible and malicious journalist at every step.
That is polite and diplomatic.
Yeah. And then the last sort of surprise that there will be is, and this may not even be the last one that's a surprise, but
you got to keep some of them a surprise.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. You got Kit Daniels, who was deposed in our case and in Fontaine.
My man.
In fact, broke down in tears for what he did to Marcel Fontaine.
By tier four man.
He is going to be appearing in his Lafferty deposition because he was also deposed there as well. Mm-hmm. So we're going to have testimony from him there. So we have a lot of people, and we'll have a lot of people at trial. We have experts. They're fully disclosed, so I don't mind telling you that we're going to have Fred Zipp, the longtime editor of the Austin Statesman, testify about journalism and the standards of care. He's now a University of Texas professor.
Mm-hmm.
We'll have Becca Lewis, who, if any of our Twitter people, y'all might know Becca as one of the foremost combaters of misinformation out there. She's a top-notch media researcher, and she's going to be testifying a lot about the spread of InfoWars message. And then we'll also have the therapist who's treated Neil and Scarlett since the day of Sandy Hook,
mm-hmm.
and as well as Dr. Roy Lubit, who is a forensic psychologist who is published in the field of denial of trauma, and he's going to be talking to the jury as well. And we'll be seeing from the plaintiffs and a variety of InfoWars employees. So it's going to be, you know, a lot of people were kind of worried coming into this, if it just being a damages trial, are you going to get the full measure of what happened here? And you absolutely will. Mm-hmm. We're going to be going through the entire story of what happened and everything that's necessary.
For that jury since you're kind of deprived of the the trial itself, you know, there is a need perhaps for the jury that's deciding these damages to have some of that in this context, you know?
Well,
if you're talking about like what you're saying a number for the damages, you should have an appreciation for what the damage that was done was, you know?
I think, the important part to hear is that the jury won't just be compensating for their harms to the plaintiffs. They'll also be awarding punitive damages to address the wanton malicious conduct. And in doing that, they'll have to really consider how bad was this conduct.
Yeah.
So we're going to need to do a deep dive into exactly what they knew, when they knew it. And I think, you know, even for Knowledge Fight listeners, I think it's going to be deeply surprising for them just the sheer volume that they attacked the subject with, the amount that they tormented people, and the absolute depravity of knowing what they did was wrong, that the people they were talking to were crazy. It's really a shocking story. And for it to be all aired in one place, it's finally going to happen.
You know, even for me, somebody who's pretty well versed in this, when I came down for the deposition, seeing some of the materials was pretty surprising for me. Like, I can be as cynical as the next guy. And for me, there was even a, I don't want to say benefit of the doubt, but there was a, I don't want to assume the worst until, you know, you see some information. Some of that is public because it was in those depositions. But like some of those Wolfgang Halbig emails, some of the indications of awareness of things, it was pretty eye-opening. And if, you know, I assume there's a lot more. So
there is.
That's going to be a bummer.
Lot of surprises to come. And it's going to be quite a show.
Let me ask you a question here. You're talking about surprises. You're talking about InfoWars employees. Were you able to track down my man, Jakari Jackson, or my gal, Leanne McAdoo? Because I want to meet them. They're the old school people.
My friend, I have searched high and low. I have uncovered every rock. And I must report to you that they are, like the snows of yesteryear, gone from this earth.
I guess, maybe best to let them, Actually, they were involved in all this. I was going to say they weren't involved in all this. But no, they were.
No, they very much were. Yeah. In fact, Leanne has not made much of an appearance in the videos that have been public and stuff. But, you know, like there's going to be videos of her and Rob Dew talking about some of the most vile stuff in this case. Like this idea that the Super Bowl choir was actually the murdered children. I mean... Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I remember that from some of the time I was going back over that period of their content. Yeah, it was a little disappointing. Yeah. Well, it was a lot disappointing.
It's a lot disappointing. Yeah. But here it is, excited moments, sir.
Yeah, this is gonna be. I mean, obviously, I don't want to say this is gonna be fun because it's not. But
it will not. I can tell you that 100%. No,
it will be cathartic and and very interesting to see how it plays out.
I heard Jones say that he was going to have Barnes hosting the show so he could come to the trial.
Really?
And you know what? Yeah, let's see if he does that. Let's see if he does that.
The Barnes that he's thinking about suing?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I keep seeing that of like him showing up on the show and talking all this stuff. And it's like literally Alex Jones wrote an affidavit saying Barnes botched the case and please don't do X and Y because we got rid of Barnes. Yeah. And he's still like, God, what a stupid joke when you see them up there.
I mean, the code for that is Barnes botched the case, which I wanted him to do. And now I'm blaming him in a meaningless way.
Yeah. Everything they've ever done is a lie to the court. It's just disgusting how much they just abjectly lie to the court. Yeah. But I really do believe it's true that, like, if he's not in that courtroom, I mean, come on, look at the stuff that's like, even if you don't care about, like, he wants to stay away from the parents. He wants to like reduce the idea that there's a conflict between him and the parents. I get that, whatever. I'm the guy, right? I'm the guy who's the center of this conspiracy to take him down. I'm True. The guy who has caused all these things. Like, if you don't show up in that courtroom to face me, man, what the hell?
Yeah.
4 years, buddy. We've been building up to this. You show up into that courtroom. And I can tell you one person, even like, look, it should be just for that, for all of this building up. But if he doesn't show up into that courtroom, I can tell you one person who's going to be damn disappointed in that is Neil Huston.
Yeah.
Because Neil has been waiting 4 years to look that man in the face in the courtroom and say, you're going to take this. You're going to sit in front of a jury of your peers. He doesn't do that. God, what kind of man is he?
Yeah, that's something that gets really lost in, and I think it's intentional in the way that Alex discusses the case, like how he's so jammed up and how it's like a show trial for him. And like the reality is him trying to invalidate all of this is invalidating the family's right to have their day in court. And then the flip side of that is that would also be his day in court.
Look, you know? Yeah, but look. I like to even further emphasize what this means for the families, right? And I don't mean to be overdramatic about this, is that when you have a plaintiff who is actual injury, when him and Scarlett's actual injury is the denial of their trauma, right? Mm-hmm. Is the denial, then the vindication of a jury verdict is not just about justice. It is, I don't want to be overdramatic, medically necessary. Mm-hmm. Do you understand? Like, they need to have this moment. They need to have a public reckoning where it's recognized their son was real. This was bullshit. What he did to them was bullshit. Like, this needs to stop being, the legacy needs to be how they vindicated the legacy of their child, not that their child's legacy is in doubt, all of this.
Yeah.
If that doesn't happen, if that doesn't fully happen, they can't ever heal. Like, this trial is not even, that's its most important function.
Mm-hmm.
Is look, we're all going to get a lot out of it too. Culturally, it has a lot to gain. But for these parents, if he doesn't come in there and face him, what the hell?
Yeah.
Man?
Yeah. It's the antidote to that negation is affirmation, you know, to
Bingo.
On exactly. some level. Yeah.
Yep.
Well, I guess I don't want to keep you all night. So
not at all, man.
Because we could talk for quite a while.
We could.
I'm sure.
We could. Yeah,
is there any other like important points you want to get across, or, you know, any message?
I don't know. You know,
any message to the wonks out there?
Yeah. So first of all, like, thank you everybody out there in Knowledge Fight Land.
For the gummy worms.
Yeah, I've been real. Like, yeah. They sent Bill some gummy worms. That was really nice. I don't know. It's been a really, it's the best fan base I've ever encountered in my life. They're passionate and supportive and just, I don't know. Love all of you. If any of you reside in Austin, the trial is open. It's your courthouse. Come on down. Mm-hmm. And make yourself seen there and be a part of history and see it all. I would love to see you there. But just, you know, if you can't,
But also leave me alone. Leave me alone because I'm socially awkward.
Do not talk to me. Yeah, please do not approach me or any of that. I will spray you with a spray bottle.
You just brought up a good point, though. There is a live stream of the proceedings.
There will be a live stream. If you need to find it, all you need to do is go to YouTube and search the 459th District Court, and you will find the court's YouTube page. And you know, tweet and support and do whatever you can to have the community cathartic effect that we need, right? Like, do what you got to do. And just keep us in your thoughts. And pretty soon, we'll be at the end of this long journey.
I don't know what kind of angles the cameras in the courtroom will have, but if you look, you might be able to find an Easter egg of this guy.
Yeah.
Wearing a Hawaiian shirt of some sort. Maybe. No, I'll wear something respectful.
Yes, of course. I don't know what I was just about to say. It's going to be X, and I don't know what it's going to be.
Yeah.
It's just going to be. Let's check it out. Let's see what happens here. It's going to be interesting.
I look forward to seeing you, and I look forward to this process working itself to its conclusion, and hope everybody comes out the other side a bit better for it, except for Alex.
Absolutely.
All right. Thanks. Absolutely. Thanks so much, Mark. Best of luck.
Solidarity forever, my friend.
Amen.
Andy in Kansas, you're on the air. Thanks for holding.
Hello, Alex. I'm a first-time caller. I'm a huge fan. I love your work.
I love you.